This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, Music from DePauw. This week, we talked to Katja Kramer-Lappin and Matvei Lappin about their upcoming recital with special guest cellist Eric Edberg. We chat with vocal professor Kerry Jennings about his new CD, which includes a work by Libby Larson, our guest composer for the Music of the 21st Century Festival. We also talk with our band, choir, and orchestra directors, as well as the founder of the festival, Professor Amy Lynn Barber. It's a big week for Music of the 21st Century, just one of the many exciting things going on in the DePauw School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. On Monday night, we have a faculty recital that includes a husband and wife duo. Katja Kramer-Lappin is one of our faculty pianists, and Matvei Lappin, her husband, a violinist. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you here.
Thank you. We're thrilled.
Tell us a bit about your recital that's coming up. I also understand you have another special guest appearing.
Yeah, which is Professor Eric Edberg, the cellist. And perhaps we can start with the trio that we're going to perform by Saint-Saëns that's called The Muse and the Poet.
Mm.
Extremely interesting piece, opus 132. So it's late.
It's a pretty late piece. It's interesting. It was sort of a retreat for him after composition of the very first movie score.
Wow.
And this piece was actually composed for a memory of a lady benefactor who just recently passed, just before that. And he first made it for violin and cello and piano accompaniment. And then, by suggestion of Eugene Isaïe, he orchestrated it for the orchestra. So we are performing the first version of it.
Ah.
I don't think, as far as I know, he didn't intend this title. And the title was invented by a publisher to be a little better sell.
Yeah. You know, isn't that funny how we always think if we put a handle on it, it'll sell better?
Yeah.
You know, and that's happened to so many works.
There is a trace in their letters. And Saint-Saëns was somewhat doubtful about the label, but then finally he agreed.
Well, it must have worked because it's a very popular work. And have you guys been working on this for a while together as a trio? Because you work together as a duo regularly, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yes, and that was great. We had a great dynamic, and it's a pleasure to work with Eric. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic cellist, great friend, great colleague. So we're having a great time really rehearsing that. So I'm really excited about
it. Is that what closes the program? Was that open?
It is.
Yes,
so we're kind of going backwards.
What else is on the program?
Well, we're starting with one of my favorite composers lately, Alfred Schnittke. Mm. I find him definitely one of the most important composers of the 20th century, Russian composer. To me, it's like a discovery of myself in his music. He reflects just about everything, the reality, you know, relationships, all the important values that one has in life, and it's a journey.
Mm.
So very intriguing, passionate, exciting, yet very philosophical music. So, so I'm really excited to
share that passion for this work?
I like it a lot, actually. I performed it quite a number of times years ago, and it's an amazing piece with the range of emotions between very scary and sometimes ugly things.
Mm.
On the one end, and on the other end, there is tender, there is reflections, there is some sadness at moments. It's quite an early work, and he was in the beginning of his finding his own style.
Mm.
But we can hear most of the features that are distinctively Schnittke in his latest career. It was a period that he called himself a second conservatory. He graduated from conservatory. It's pretty much intellectual music in a way. But it's amazing how he is able to feel this intellectual construction with emotions, and a very lyrical sense in the first movement and some irony and sarcasm in the second movement. And then third movement reminds some of the features of second Viennese school. And there is a lot of polytonal things in this work, in general, polyrhythmical things, a la Stravinsky, for example.
Right.
But as I said, there is something already very distinct about his own style.
Mm. And so what makes up the middle? We know how it opens, we know how it ends.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is funny. We picked up a piece. Originally, it's an etude by Scriabin, Alexander Scriabin, for piano. And we know he wrote most of his music for piano, obviously. So the etude is transcribed for violin and piano. So the challenge is, all the pianists I know will support me in this, and I'm excited to share that. It's thirds. You know, the piano, it's a very challenging piano technique, so it's falling thirds, you know, up and down, and it's usually a very difficult etude, you know, performed on, you know, Tchaikovsky competition or, like, major competitions, and considered to be a really, really difficult piece to put together. So I'm excited that all the tough part is on Matvey, violin. So
the perfect solution. Take the difficult stuff and write it out for someone else.
So I know all the pianists will support me that, so there I just put the left hand in.
So now, did you do this transcription yourself?
No, I wish.
I looked at all the hard parts, and I pass them over to my husband, and then I accompany him while he does this.
It was actually done by Joseph Szigeti in the 30s, and he found it equally challenging for violin, if not more. And it's interesting that there are two pages of violin part, but then he added six more pages of exercises.
To prepare for those two pages of performance.
An explanation.
Wow.
So that is very challenging and very interesting.
Well, wisely chosen there.
Okay, thank you. All right. And then there is Ravel Sonata for violin and piano, one of the major works for a duo for violin and piano. And it's a completely different world. You know, French Impressionism, a lot of Oriental accents, as we know, and fashion and style. Meditation. It's completely, it's like we're polarizing so much in the concert in terms of different styles, different composers. You know, it's like we need to completely reset and, you know, go into a different world right after what we had, and then we have a Saint-Saëns to close.
That's one of the wonderful things about chamber music and any music, really, any performance, is that you inhabit many worlds in it without leaving your chair.
Right.
You know, it's so you've presented this to us. We have a moment to kind of reset.
Exactly.
And then you take us into a whole new world, and then we have a moment to reset, and off into a new world we go. It sounds like a fascinating program. It's full of variety texturally, because you've added a cello at the end, challenge-wise for the performers as well. I hope those six pages have gone very well for you, and a wide variety of composers. So we look forward to this performance, and thanks for coming in to chat about
it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
From the Producer's Vault, here's a recording from February 8th, 2012, of Matvey Lapin and Katya Kramer-Lapin performing the third movement of Karol Szymanowski's Sonata Opus 9 in Thompson Recital Hall.
This is an exciting week coming up here at DePauw as we begin our Music of the 21st Century. And most of our show this week is dedicated to music of the 21st century. And we'll start our conversations with the founder of this festival, which is Dr. Amy Barber. Welcome.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
So what year is this for Music of the 21st Century?
This is the 11th edition.
11th edition. And this year's guest is?
Libby Larson.
Now, has she been here before?
She was here actually sometime, I think around 2000. I wasn't here yet, but some of the folks who were here then remember her visit.
So prior to there actually being a Music of the 21st Century, she happened to be an artist in residence, and now this is her first visit formally in the Music of the 21st Century. Maybe we should tell our listeners how we decide which composer gets invited to be a part of this.
Well, one of the motivations of this event was to bring to the School of Music distinguished composers of the stature of the kinds of guests that the Ubben series brings in for the rest of the university. Mm-hmm. So we strive to find people who have certainly a national, if not an international, reputation. And we've had several Pulitzer Prize winners, and all of the composers have just been outstanding.
They're world-renowned composers that come here as part of this, and Libby Larson is certainly no exception. And it's hard, really, to choose who we're going to invite because the list is
So many good composers in so little time.
Exactly. Well, let's back up a bit. How did we get this started? You started this in 2003.
Three was the first edition, yes. Well, there is a history of composers coming to visit DePauw.
Mm-hmm. Aaron Copland being the most famous, probably.
For decades before. So there's always been a presence and I think a recognition of the need for that. But I wanted to create something that was really sort of etched in stone, that would be a regular event that would enable us to organize several days around this composer's visit and bring it not only to the School of Music's attention, but to the whole campus and the community's attention.
Absolutely. And it really electrifies the School of Music because so many elements of the school come to life with a work specifically written for them.
And because all of our large ensembles participate, that means every single music major and many CLA students are really interacting with this composer.
Right. And they spend several days on campus working in master classes and workshops and rehearsals and that type of thing.
Exactly.
And then they get to hear their works come to life in a series of performances.
And it's been interesting to hear from all of these composers after the fact how thrilled they are to have two or in some cases even three concerts dedicated completely to their works.
Right.
It's sort of a feast for them. They're just delighted with it.
And I tell you, last year was my first experience with Music of the 21st Century, and one of the things that I enjoyed most of all was watching our guest composer light up at the quality of the performances right off the bat, because we were playing that percussion concerto.
Certainly the presence of the composer puts an edge on things, and students really are sitting at the edge of their seats and trying their absolute best, so we've had some wonderful results.
Right. Last year was a great one because Joseph Schwantner was our guest, and because he had just been commissioned to do a percussion concerto that had been premiered
by the Indianapolis Symphony, yes.
Right, just a few months prior. Mm-hmm. So now he comes back to to Indiana.
And that was only the second performance of that piece, so we were in a very exciting position.
And to have a student performing it.
Yes.
I mean, what an amazing opportunity. And of course, Josiah Rushing performed, and Joe Schwantner walked up and shook his hand and said, "When you need a reference, you count on me." He was really taken by that performance. Now, this year, Libby writes for an incredibly wide array of
She has hundreds of compositions, incredible diversity.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so everyone gets a chance. So we've got some chamber music lined up for this and some large ensemble music, some solo work. Actually, one of our faculty members, Carrie Jennings, just released a new CD or is about to release a new CD that includes a work of Libby's.
Exactly. The My Antonia Songs by Willa Cather. And it's a wonderful coincidence that we're able to sort of unveil that CD when Libby is here. That's nice for Carrie.
Right.
Really exciting.
Timed out perfectly in that regard. So he'll be performing that. And then we've also asked a few of the performers to perform for our visiting Board of Visitors. So the DePauw University Board of Visitors happens to be on campus the same weekend that this is going on. And so we have Juba, which is a work for
cello and piano. And it's, if you know the derivation of the word juba, it's an African-American musical tradition in which there's a lot of foot stomping and thigh clapping. And so I think it typifies one of the strong elements in Libby's work, which is to draw on Americana.
Right.
American authors and writers, American historical characters, American musical styles.
So. Yeah, the number of things that move her to write are really amazing to me. She'll write a piece that's based on Eleanor Roosevelt. We have the Eleanor Roosevelt songs being performed as part of this. She'll write a piece based upon a Pentecostal preacher, and that's one of the pieces that we're doing. She'll write a piece for Auctioneer or for this juba piece, which actually requires the pianist and the cellist to also do a little
exactly.
of that clapping along,
juba,
which is
yeah.
really kind of interesting.
Yeah, the music that Libby writes could only have been written by an American composer.
Right.
It's so deeply embedded in American culture and folklore, mm-hmm. history, characters.
And then the piece Corker we're doing for the Board of Visitors as well as on a performance. And so tell us a little bit about that piece.
That's a duet for one percussionist and a clarinetist. And we have two wonderful students to play it, Josiah Rushing and Dan Hickey. And it's a lot of percussion, although it's not really a bombastic piece, but there's a lot of percussion involved. I hope those visitors don't mind. I hope they're not intimidated over lunch seeing that percussion set up so close to them. But, you know, the word corker kind of implies that this is really something over the top. So
it's a real corker.
It is. Yeah. It's a real corker. And it's a lot of fun for the players and for the listeners, I think.
So we've got an amazing array of music. We have our choir. We have our orchestra. We have our band. We have a number of our chamber ensembles. We have our vocalist, our instrumentalist. Libby's written over 500 works.
Yes.
And we've chosen carefully to really show off her works, but also show off the quality of the School mm-hmm. of Music simultaneously.
And I'm so pleased that we have so much vocal music this year because mm-hmm. a couple of our recent composers haven't written vocal music.
Right.
Their attentions were focused entirely on instrumental music. So the vocal department sort of got short shrift those years, but this year they're making up for it with some wonderful contributions by both the students and the faculty. So that's
and
exciting.
This wouldn't be possible were it not for the generosity of couple.
Our good friends, Bob and Meg Schmidt. Yes, right. They are really remarkable. They live in Chicago, alums, of course, and they live in Chicago, and they contribute generously to the cultural life in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
commissioning concertos and chamber music for the Chicago Symphony and other groups, and they've extended that generosity to us so that we can have a major composer here every year, and to them we are so grateful.
Right, and it's exciting because up until now, they've been sponsoring this just every year. They just make it happen for us, and then this past year, they've agreed to endow it because they want it to live in perpetuity. They want to make certain that this opportunity to bring living composers to DePauw does not go away.
Yeah, that's a wonderful gift.
We're really in their debt. I said to Bob when he was here that, you know, we're an institution that's proud of the fact we're one of the first schools of music in America. We're proud of our history, but he keeps our eyes on the future. Through his gifts, he makes it possible
exactly.
for us to continue to look forward. And this airs actually just a day after the performance of the ISO with Thomas Hampson. So last week we talked about the ISO and Thomas Hampson, but one of your students had a really interesting experience with the ISO in their last performance at DePauw.
Yes, Patrick Speranza, who's a senior now, and in fact off campus right now because he's doing his student teaching, was contacted at the last minute, and I do mean the last minute, to step into the... He had to see if he had a white shirt clean, you know, to get his concert dress on. One of the percussionists in the symphony was hospitalized, was very ill at the last minute, and Patrick was called on to play, and I was so proud of him. He did such a wonderful
job.
Didn't
he do a great job? Just walked in, you know.
Yep. And sight reading, no rehearsal,
and
strange conductor, you know. I was just so proud of
and
him.
And not a piece you could hide. I mean, what he was
right.
playing was not...
That's right.
It wasn't a piece that you would not know was played well, and he stepped in. You know, it kind of reminded me of Bernstein called in at the last minute, you know, to fill in for an ailing Bruno Walter, and his career was launched. And,
yeah. And speaking of not hiding, since Patrick is so tall,
yeah.
what is he, 6'5" or
right.
6? I
yeah,
don't know.
Right.
He could not hide.
Right. There was no way for him to hide musically or visually in
but
that case.
I was thrilled for him and very, very proud of him.
What a great opportunity. Well, thanks for coming to the chat with us about music of the 21st century. This is a wonderful tradition that you've launched for us, and it's gone on now into its second decade. And we couldn't be more thrilled to welcome Libby Larson to campus, and thank you for putting that together and coming in to chat with us.
Thanks.
Thank you. Music of the 21st Century is a smorgasbord of events from Wednesday through Sunday. The performance events begin on Wednesday, February 27th with our traditional recital hour. This is from 10:30 to 11:30, which will feature Juba. It will have a conversation with Libby and will also feature My Antonia. Thursday evening, we have some great performances in store for you at our regular chamber music concert. This would be at 7:30. Interestingly, this will be in Kresge, not in Thompson, and it will feature Corker, The Apple Song, Turn, Turn, Eleanor Roosevelt, several other works. That will be Thursday, February 28th at 7:30. Then on Friday, March the 1st at 7:30, we will also have a chamber music concert. This one will be in Thompson. And then on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Kresge Auditorium, we will have the large ensembles concert and the closing concert of Music of the 21st Century. You could stop by the School of Music at any time, Wednesday through Sunday, and find something going on, and all of these events are open to the public. Feel free to drop by at any time, but our performances are Wednesday at 10:30, Thursday and Friday evenings at 7:30, and Sunday at 3 o'clock. You can get tickets for any of the performance events, the evening performance events, on our website or at brownpapertickets.com or at our box office. All of the daily events are free and open to the public. Hope to see you there. When we have the guest composer on campus, they are able to work with many students and solo and chamber and large ensemble opportunities. Here to chat with me about the opportunity for the orchestra is the orchestra's conductor, Professor Orsina Smith. Welcome back.
Good day.
So tell me, what will you be performing of Libby's work?
Well, there are two works. I try to always look at the guest composer and try to find something that's a little bit older in the repertoire, and then something newer so that the audience can have a sense of the progression, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So the first work was written in 1983. It's entitled Deep Summer Music.
Mm.
And then the second work on the program is entitled Bach 358, which was written in 2008. So there's a good 25
years. And 358 has some type of meaning?
358 has to do with intervals. When you read about how Libby talks about her music, she says that we all exist in the environment and in the space, and there's resonance even in the atmosphere. And so for her, this discussion about the third, the fifth, and the octave as points of resonance represent 3, 5, 8.
Mm.
So she took this theme, the royal theme that was provided to Johann Sebastian Bach by Frederick the Great, and she evaluated the intervals in it and then created this piece of music based on that and these resonances of the third, fifth, and the octave.
Ah, I see. She has an amazing body of work.
Yeah, 500 pieces or
right.
so.
Right, mm-hmm. Really remarkable. So it's hard for you, I'm sure, to choose.
Right.
Just
well,
to.
I would say that the orchestra has always tried to have a path within the total aggregate of whatever else is performed on the music of the 21st century related to the things that we did in the years past or what we want to have another ensemble perform. So last year, the University Orchestra with Joseph Schwantner did Free Flight, something that was written for Boston Pops, and then did two movements of his latest percussion concerto.
Mm-hmm.
And this was quite a load, and the person who administrates music of the 21st century, Dr. Amy Lynn Barber, said, you know, if the University Orchestra would like to take a little bit lighter load this year so that we can give a heavier load to choirs and band, that would be fine. So these pieces are both about 5 or 6 minutes long. They are presentationally very different, very interesting, and they open the door, I think, the second piece, especially Bach 358, opens the door for some of the pieces that the other organizations mm-hmm. are going to be playing. I think it sets up a good tone for that.
This is a remarkable opportunity for our students to rehearse a piece with the composer.
Well, I think what happens is the composer has two different perspectives, maybe even three. One is on stage listening to detail. Two, listening out in the house to see if the total aggregate works for them, because they learn over a period of time as a composer what music sounds like out in the hall, even when they're writing the little black spots on the page. But also the additional insights that come, even though the program notes might be very specific about why they wrote what they did. There's additional insight, perhaps, that the composer gives for what the inspiration was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is tremendous as far as how the student learns to adapt to those concepts, because most of the time as music students, we're playing music of somebody else's and we're trying to fit our notes into a pattern, into a scheme, and then into a broader aesthetic. And it's really nice to have the living composer there to tell you how it was inspired.
Are our students brave enough to actually converse with these? Or are they still so, here's a god right in front of us that divined this music from beyond. Are they in awe of these composers, or are they ready to interact with them, or do they just sit quietly and do what the composer dictates?
Well, I think in the ensemble setting, of course, that particular setting would suggest that the time is really valued to actually execute it in the way in which the composer would suggest. So it doesn't seem a perfect opportunity to raise questions unless the composer would ask that. Mm-hmm. There are other opportunities. Certainly, when Aaron J. Kernis was here, we set up a meeting in the corner for students to have lunch, and there are other opportunities in music for the 21st century. But the major ensemble setting, unless it's prompted by the composer, probably not.
It's a completely different setting when you are performing and the composer is in the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pressure mounts, and I think that students feel this very acutely that, wow, the composer is in the room, and now we really must stand and deliver and make certain that we're doing exactly what this composer envisioned this piece to be. So it's a great opportunity for our students to view that music in a different way. It's one thing when we're playing music of composers of many years ago that have passed on and we've inherited that tradition. It's quite a different thing when the composer is alive and standing in the room with us.
I think the job of the conductor is to continue to serve as a medium for what they think the music is and how it's being presented. And in Libby's music, we find a contrast between, especially in deep summer music, we find a contrast of placid, benign beauty, which is almost minimalistic, with these aggressive gestures that pass into the texture and out. The piece ends very benignly. In Bach 358, there are a number of pieces of Libby's that I've heard before where she has a point of view. Sometimes it's whimsical. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it borders on sarcastic, where she wants to take something serious and then look at it in a different way, perhaps more pointedly. And Bach 358 is very much like that. It starts as an oboe solo that presents this theme that Frederick the Great gave to Bach and said, here, improvise on this. And then it has some points in the little recitative of the oboe where the oboe plays different notes that are purposeful to be pointed and point the music in a different direction. The piece unfolds as a work where the main motto is respected, and then parts of the chromatic fall in the gesture are places where there's a little twinge of whimsy or sarcasm. So the piece is built on that duality.
It's a brilliant work, and one that we'll thrill to see brought to life on our own stage with our own orchestra and with the composer in the room. So thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
From a CD on Innova Records, this is Caroline Hartig, clarinet, and Christopher Kachian, guitar, performing Libby Larson's Deep Blue from the Blue Third Pieces. Thank you.
Music of the 21st Century this year will feature the music of Libby Larson and will give us an opportunity to bring vocal works and choral works to life in a way that last year Joseph Schwantner didn't quite bring to the table, because Joseph is very much an orchestral and instrumental composer, although he has written for all voices and done so admirably. Libby, on the other hand, with so many works open to us, gives our choirs a chance to shine. And here to chat with us about that is our choral director, Dr. Greg Risto. Welcome.
Thank you.
So what have you chosen from her repertoire to bring to life?
Two very different pieces. Chamber singers will be singing her Eleanor Roosevelt, which is a dramatic choral cantata about the life of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Now that requires a soloist.
It does, and that's our faculty mezzo-soprano, Caroline Smith.
Uh-huh.
It's an exciting work. It uses a lot of her own words, a lot of words taken from her speeches, passages from her autobiography, and they're all woven together within a broader libretto to really paint a picture of an extraordinary woman in her life and times.
Yeah, it's funny. Now we'll digress momentarily here, but it's interesting that we think of Hillary Rodham Clinton as a very powerful first lady, mm-hmm. and she's broken the mold. But the truth is, Eleanor Roosevelt was a formidable woman.
She was, absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And so Libby has chosen to set this.
That's right. And in really, I think a lot of times when we think of Libby's music, we think of the American Copland Argento mm-hmm. influences. And of course, those are here when she's talking about, you know, this iconic figure of American history. Mm-hmm. But it's also a much more jagged, hard-edged piece than really any of her other choral music. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to choose it, to give our chamber singers a chance to sing something really gnarly, harmonically mm-hmm. challenging, mm-hmm. And really fascinating.
Right. And the other work?
And then University Chorus will sing her Settling Years. And this is what I think of as just absolute classic Libby Larson music.
Yeah.
It's poetry about settling the American West. Mm-hmm. And they could very easily have been Copland mm-hmm. in places. You really hear that cowboy spirit, that cowboy energy. It's great fun. There's even a point in the third movement where the chorus comes off the risers and does a barn dance, basically. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Libby really picked up the Copland mantle on that piece.
She sure did. You know, and we hear it also in her cowboy songs for solo voice as well. It's a theme that she's come back to at certain points through her career very well.
Does she address the Copland connection?
I've never heard her speak about it, and she mm-hmm. doesn't reference it in the score. It'll be interesting to see if she talks about that when she's working with us.
Mm-hmm. We think of Copland as the dean of American music and the person who opened the Wild West to us musically in some ways.
Sure.
And Libby has certainly picked up on that in a really beautiful way, in a meaningful way.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
How are the students doing with this work?
Both choirs are really loving the music. It's good stuff for them. It's well-written for the voice. And you can also see in them the sense of really wanting to get it just right for the composer.
Which is it intimidating to have the composer coming to listen in?
I think it may be a little bit for them. For me, I think it probably for most conductors, we think of our job as being to try and find what the composer wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's really great for the students is that then when you get the composer with you, you start to realize how much a piece of music is not in the score.
Yeah, the ink is so limiting.
It is, and every composer will tell you that when you work with them. And I think doing that frees you up then when you're looking at music by composers who aren't living anymore, to say, how do I really bring this to life? What would they have wanted? If they were standing here next to me,
mm-hmm.
would they really have just wanted me to do the ink on the page, mm-hmm. or what else is there that brings the music to life?
I find it fascinating. In our prep program, students who are younger and are just learning to read music, they find it so challenging because there's so many different elements to reading music. And mm-hmm. yet, we don't scratch the surface of what music really is with all that nomenclature.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
We can't really express, and that's why the conductor and the performer have to come in and bring their musical heart and soul to bear on this too, because the composer didn't have any way to express it.
Yeah, their knowledge of other rep, their knowledge of styles like that. I mean, there's so many hints in music that when you know these other pieces and other rep, you recognize and say, oh yeah, okay, this is a reference to a hoedown,
right.
You know, or whatever.
And these are the elements that are ineffable and indescribable, and we don't have a symbol for
that's
that
right.
The composer would have wanted us to do, but there's just no way for them to say so.
Sure, yeah. And they may not have thought they needed to say so. I think of that with Bach's music a lot.
Right.
Just the assumption that, of course, you're going to know all these old Baroque dance styles.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, why we're not going to have to, why write Sarabande? Because obviously it's a Sarabande.
Right.
You just know that in the same way.
And
you know,
Sarabande means all of these things, musical interpretive things
sure.
that are not anywhere in the score.
In the score, that's right.
Or for the speed with which Mozart wrote, in which just, of course you're going to do this musically and you know what to do, so
right.
I'm just going to write the notes and you'll figure out the mm-hmm. rest. So it becomes a bit of a challenge or a new added dimension when the composer is going to come in and hear their work performed.
That's right, yeah.
And then be able to bring verbally through conversation, things that they just simply couldn't bring you in ink.
In the score, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so Libby is such a gracious spirit to work with. She's just really the ideal person to do that with our students.
Mm-hmm. So Music of the 21st Century is an incredible opportunity for our students, because not just that we're playing music of the 21st century, but we're playing music of the 21st century with the musician of the 21st century that composed it in the room with us. What a remarkable opportunity.
It's great.
Well, thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
From a CD on the Gothic Records label, this is organist Douglas Cleveland performing Libby Larson's Veni Creator Spiritus.
One of the exciting elements of Libby Larson's visit is that we are going to announce the release of a CD by one of our faculty members that actually includes a new Libby Larson piece on it. And here to chat with me about their new release is one of our vocal professors, Dr. Kerry Jennings. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you've been working on this new CD for quite a while.
We have.
And I understand it's about to be released on the Centaur label.
That's correct.
So it's imminent. It's going to be any time now, huh?
Yes. We're waiting with bated breath.
And it is you and Amanda Hobson, who is one of our pianists.
That's right.
And recorded live here at DePaul.
In Thompson Recital Hall.
In Thompson Recital Hall. Which piano did you use?
We used the Steinway.
Used the Steinway.
Yes.
Tell me about the album first, and we'll get into Libby Larson in a moment. But sure. So tell us first about the CD.
It is a CD of all American songs and song cycles for tenor and piano. It includes a song cycle by Libby Larson, one by Tom Chipulo, one by Richard Pearson Thomas, and then two songs by Lori Laitman.
Is this something you've been working on for a while, or thinking about, or dreaming about?
It's something that I've been dreaming about for quite some time, since the first time that I met Libby in 2008, and we actually talked about the possibility of my recording My Antonia.
Is it often recorded?
It's been recorded twice. It was originally recorded by Paul Sperry and Margot Garrett, and it has also been recorded one time since by a soprano.
Hmm. So you talked to her about the possibility of this, and that sparked the idea?
Yeah, I did a masterclass with her, and making a recording of American songs has been something I've wanted to do for quite some time. And in working with her, I sang a different piece, but after working with her, I asked her what she thought about the music that she had written and how it would fit with my voice, and she immediately said she thought that I should record My Antonia. And so now, 6 years later, we finally have done it.
It comes full circle, yeah. And now you're in a different place than you last were.
That's
she's
right.
In a different place than you last saw her, and
yes.
She's coming here, and she's going to find out you've already done it.
Yeah.
You've recorded it.
Yeah.
Tell us about the piece.
Well, it's based on the novel by Willa Cather, My Antonia, and it's a wonderful piece of music. Libby's writing, of course, is so descriptive, and there are so many elements in it. It is from the remembrances of Jim, mm-hmm. and so it starts with him on a train, and you can hear the train motive that occurs throughout the cycle. He, of course, sings quite a bit about Antonia, mm-hmm. and Antonia and the death of her father, and the winters on the prairie, and all sorts of things, and her writing is so descriptive of all of these things, and there's even a folk waltz in one of the pieces, and so I think when people hear it, they'll know that it's Libby, and they'll also understand, if they know anything about this novel, how beautifully she has set these words.
She's very evocative.
Yes.
In all of her work,
but yeah.
I find this with her vocal work mm-hmm. in particular. And so you will be performing this work.
That's correct.
As well.
Yes,
as
Wednesday morning at the 10:30 recital hour.
We certainly put our guest composers through their paces when they come to visit
right.
for Music of the 21st Century. So we do a recital for students at 10:30, our regular Wednesday recital hour, and we also have Thursday and Friday night performances, and then a big Sunday concert. And it's great to take someone like Libby as our 21st century musician composer, because she has so much work.
Yes.
I mean, gosh, over 500 works in her catalog.
That's right.
And she looks like she's about 25
she
years
does.
Old. And
and she presents herself in that way, too.
Yeah,
I mean, she just is so wonderful with the students and, you know, and of course, advanced people as well. But,
right.
You know, to see her work with undergraduate students and how giving she is of her time and her energy, which is endless, is pretty remarkable to see.
So what attracted you to her work?
I would say that Libby's work is just really accessible for the voice. You know, mm-hmm. you find a lot of contemporary composers who, particularly as they try to be really avant-garde, mm-hmm. that it just doesn't work for singers.
It becomes
particularly
unsingable.
Well. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, barring having perfect pitch and a 3-octave range, there are some things that just simply are unsingable.
Right.
And hers is not that. Although it's very challenging,
mm-hmm.
It's still very singable. And the things that she has written pretty much run the gamut. I mean,
right.
we have some freshmen and sophomores that are singing some of her music. And then, of course, you know, Amanda and I have recorded this mm-hmm. piece as well. So it presents its challenges, but it's certainly accessible.
Right. From a performer's perspective, it's a remarkable gamut in that some of it can be done by college, you know, and even younger, perhaps, singers
right.
As they're developing. And some of it is incredibly challenging. And
yes.
then from the listener's perspective, there's this wide variety.
That's
too.
Right.
Even though it's all what we would consider accessible, I think.
Yes.
There's a wide variety within it. And not just within her vocal work, but within all of her works.
Absolutely.
So this is going to be an exciting week for us, because we're going to be doing everything from solo vocal works with piano, such as My Antonia, all the way through Holy Roller and major works for large ensembles, chamber music. We've got a mixed bag of stuff, and music will be appearing all around campus next week as part of Music of the 21st Century. Congratulations on your new album.
Thank you.
Look forward to getting it, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
From a forthcoming CD on the Centaur label, this is tenor Carrie Jennings and pianist Amanda Hobson performing the first song from Libby Larson's My Antonia cycle, entitled Landscape One, From the Train.
To be a child in a little prairie.
To round out our program today, this is the St. Olaf Band under the direction of Dr. Timothy Marr performing Libby Larson's Strut.
Hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Our student producers are Adam Luman, Anna Gatdula, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. Thank you.
It's Music for Life.